This Dwight Freeney, Terry Francona, and Rex Burkhead edition of the Sports Gambling Podcast is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100x in NBA, golf, MLB, MMA, NHL, and more. Sign up today at UnderdogFantasy.com using promo code SGPN to get a 100% deposit match. Plus, the NFL draft is coming up, and Old Fashioned Football is giving away some autographed NFL merch. Head to SportsGamblingPodcast.com/OFF contest. To enter today.
Hey folks, it's Rex Burkhead. You're listening to SGPN. Let it ride.
To the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm Sean, second the money green, with my partner in picks, Ryan Real Money Kramer. What's happening, Kramer?
Dog.
We're working overtime, Sean.
We are. Bonus episode alert. Thank you everyone for staying subscribed, smashing that subscribe button. But yeah, you know, Ryan, we're kind of movers and shakers in the celebrity golf circuit.
Yep.
Always getting some sweet, sweet interviews, talking celebrity golf, and great mix today. We got Dwight Freeney, Super Bowl champ, Rex Burkhead, Super Bowl champ, Dwight Freeney, also Hall of Famer, Terry Francona, World Series champ. Got some good Michael Jordan stories.
I feel like you're leaving things off because. Not only Terry Francona, double World Series.
Oh, you're right.
Two college time. And
pro, AL Manager of the Year.
Also has a Southern League champion, yes. As you'll find out.
College World Series champ.
Dwight Freeney, you mentioned Hall of Famer. You forgot College Football Hall of Famer as well. Right. And then Rex Burkhead, just an awesome dude from Texas.
Well, won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And that was very professional of you.
I did not bring up the loss to Nick Foles. Somehow we didn't get to it, but shout out to you, Rex. It was great. Great interviews. Think everyone's going to have grand old time. Before we get to the interviews, shout out to Game Time. That's right. Love me some Game Time. Maybe you're hitting the ballpark this weekend. NHL playoffs are coming up. And I mean, again, even if you're a casual fan, if you have some NHL playoff games going on near you, you got to get to the rink. Check out some NHL playoffs. The vibe is electric, to say the least. MLB starting up, NBA playoffs. Love us some NBA playoffs. We're going to be talking NBA playoffs and NHL playoffs later on. But again, go to gametime.co or download the Game Time app. Get your last minute deal. Save up to 60%. Imagine saving money by procrastinating. That is the Game Time way. They got the flash deals where you can save even more with exclusive in-app deals on select seats ahead of the big game or event. It's not just sports too. It's concerts, comedy, theater. They got it all. Again, go to gametime.co or download the Game Time app. Use the promo code SGPN to get you $20 off. Joining us on the line, NFL Hall of Famer, Dwight Freeney. We'll just start right there. Congratulations. It's official now. You're officially in the Hall of Fame. How does it feel? Because I feel like everyone would talk about you as future Hall of Famer, but now you officially got that title. Walk us through. That's got to feel great, getting the official notice.
Oh, my goodness. It absolutely feels great. It's one of those things where, you know, you like to control things that you don't worry about, things that you can control. And last year, not making it was so hard on me. and the thing is, it was just kind of one of those things where, I get it. There's a lot of great players. And I had the blinders on and I was trying to stay focused on everything else. Hall of Famers came up to me, Jason Taylor, Michael Strahan, all these guys said, hey, you're a shoo-in. Don't even worry about it. First ballot. Congratulations.
Oh, no. Right.
So when I didn't make it, I was absolutely rushed. I was just like, oh, what did I do to deserve this? But and then the second year, I promise you this year, I did not know who was a semifinalist, a finalist. I barely realized it was time for that to happen if it wasn't for a few interviews that I did. And obviously when they told me, I mean, I don't care like how much you try to prepare for that feeling or that moment, but you get rushed with emotion and it's just like you can't even believe that you're a Hall of Famer.
No, I mean it's completely awesome as someone who's visited the Hall of Fame. Like if you're a football fan, you go there, you walk around. It has like a spiritual feeling when you're walking around those rooms with those statues. I don't know. Like I was feeling something. I'm just a guy who's watched the game. I can only imagine someone whose entire life it was. I gotta know though. Do you talk to the guy making the bust? Are you able to give him some tips on like, hey, make sure my chin goes this way? Like, do you talk to him? Cause you want to make sure they get that right. Right.
Just don't mess it up. No, yeah. No, actually he's a great guy. Ben, I'm actually going to see him on Monday. I'm flying out to Utah and they have all this crazy, you know, 39 points on your face. You know, like they do all types of measurements. So I'm gonna go out there, make sure they got it right. Try to still figure out what my expression's gonna be.
Yeah. Because,
you know, it was one of those things where, like, okay, you know, I'm on the smile, you look mean, right? You only have two. But when you go into that Hall of Fame bus room, the one that you're probably referring to, and you see all of the heads,
yeah,
and you sit there and you're like, there are so many different expressions. And now I walked out of that room completely confused. So I got to figure out what I'm going to do.
Because
about 3 days here.
It's so funny. I never thought of that. Cause yeah, if you have like a big smile, it's one thing, but then you're a badass pass rusher. Do you go mean face?
Exactly.
Like, what do you do?
It's one of those things where it's different when you're taking a picture.
Yeah.
You take a picture, you know, you got a million other pictures that's going to follow it.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about this one. When I'm gone, dead and gone, this thing is going to be sitting there. And I got to make sure that it looks right. You know, so whenever that kid or whoever walks in, you know, it's looking the way that it's supposed to look.
It's literally in stone. And honestly, the problem for dudes is most guys, they accessorize their pictures with their hands.
Yeah.
There's a point going on. There's like there's a boxing fist. And so, yeah, I will say though, there, like Sean mentioned, there is something you do notice it. Like the expression kind of captures you. And so, yeah, good luck with that, man. I'm sure whatever you choose will be right, but that a lot of pressure. Man,
pray for me. I'm trying to figure it out.
No, that's going to be fun next time we're out there seeing you officially in there with all the other NFL greats. What about, I mean, obviously you're playing in this invited celebrity classic. Always got to be pretty exciting. We're always rooting for people. You know, I'm an Eagles fan. Co-host is a Giants fan. We're always rooting for people to knock off Tony Romo, who seemingly kind of owns these things. Are you going to be the one, Dwight, to maybe take down Tony Romo in this year's tournament?
Absolutely not. If we're talking about off the golf course, yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
All right. But we're talking about on the golf course, there isn't a chance. Those quarterbacks, man, they cheat, man. And I say, when I say they cheat, they're playing golf during the football season.
Yeah.
Okay. Those guys don't have any hips in their way. Their shoulders are all kind of aligned and skinny like these golfers. When you're a defensive lineman, offensive lineman, like my hands going this way, my fingers going the other way, my shoulders all jacked up. I can't play golf the entire season.
Yeah. Right?
So when I'm getting my rounds in, it's at the end of the season, maybe 2 months after, once my body heals up. So then I only play for 2 months. It's a completely different ball game, but Romo's obviously gonna be up there. He's a great player.
Well, we can relate to you. That's the everyman's golf game. You show up to the course, you hope it's working that day, and if not, maybe a cocktail.
Yes,
that's it.
Crack open a couple cold ones. Hope for the best. I know we'll be rooting there for you. Now, what about the modern game? Who you know? I know you watch the NFL. Still keep up with it. Who? As a pass rusher right now, is someone like, who are your top pass rushers right now in the NFL?
I mean, there's a lot of good ones right now. I think because of just, you know, the evolution of the game, I think there's a lot more passes now and more pass dominant game. And, you know, the guys that I love to watch, you know, I sit there and get excited when I see Myles Garrett rush the passer. The fact that he's so large, so big of a man, but he's able to bend the way that he does, like he's a smaller guy. That is amazing to me, how he can get the corner. He uses spin moves. I'm sitting there watching it. I'm like, oh, this is a beautiful thing. And he also can play both sides. I love him. Micah Parsons is another guy from a just a energy standpoint. Just his effort level is relentless. He's just doesn't take a playoff. He plays every play like it's the last. You know, and the way that they move him around, he goes from guard, he'll play against over the center, he'll go on the other side. You know, that's not easy to do. It's like, you know, people don't understand when you play different sides, it's like you trying, if you're a right-handed writer, trying to write with your left hand. It just doesn't. I can make it out, but it won't be the same. Some of these guys do a great job of playing both. And obviously you got TJ Watt, because he has that spin move, speed to power combo going on. So I think those three guys are my favorites.
Well, and you were kind of ahead of the game with the speed game, and I think you ran a 4.4 coming out of school. But going back into college, I was at Virginia Tech when we were both part of the Big East back in the day. So I was there when you completely ruined our season in 2001. But I'm going to take you to 2000, where you were able to sack Michael Vick 4.5 times in a single game. Yeah. You talk about how the modern game's evolved. That's what we're seeing a lot more of. So, I mean, take us back to your time at Syracuse, but more importantly, how did it feel to get Mike down on the ground?
I think I don't know what came over me that game. I think that offensive tackle is still in his stance today. That's how I feel. That's how fast I was.
We're going to have him up next on the guest line.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he didn't have chance, man. I was flying out of that stance. I feel like the earth was moving as I was coming around that corner in the carrier dome with the turf. But it was one of my best games. Unfortunately for us, you know, we were playing Michael Vick and they still won the game. We played them as tough as we possibly could. And I had one of the better games that I've ever had.
Well, and it's a weird nugget about that, Matt, because the next year, if you don't know, Syracuse came to Blacksburg, ruined what was a really good season for Virginia Tech up until that point. Both games ended 22-14. It was kind of a home and home steal. But also, like you mentioned, the pop off the turf, you ended up playing for a team that played on turf in the NFL too. That definitely helped your game in terms of the get off, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm out paying for it because I played so much turf. My ankles and my knees and my hips are killing me right now. But for a guy who's predicated on speed and that is his main deal, you know, being able to get off the ball, that's my thing. Now, if you have to change the ground where it's rainy or snow, I'm going to have to alter my game. Now, I'm not 290 pounds fighting double team type of guy. So, you know, advantage goes maybe to the other side. But when you have some good conditions and you have a turf where you can just kind of burn the corner, you know, good luck off with the tech.
Well, and I can tell you as a football fan, like I can close my eyes and see you rushing around the corner. Cause it always was that perfect bend curve.
Oh,
and
yes.
Then forced fumble.
Oh, forced fumble. I remember Dwight, your debut as an Eagles fan, because you stripped Donovan McNabb three times in a game. And I'm like, well, can no one block this kid? What's going on?
Yeah, it was
Syracuse
awesome.
On Syracuse crime. That must have felt pretty good after that game.
Orange on orange crime. It was definitely something to remember. That was the first game I ever started. And I had a huge impact in the game.
Oh, I know. I was on awesome, the other side, man. Going, how is it the same guy?
It is three forced fumbles. It's kind of like, you know, and I will say this, what people need to do, to be quite honest with you, is a forced fumble, the magnitude of a forced fumble should be on the same level as an interception.
Yeah.
And it 100%. Should be looked at that way. You know, a lot of you get the ball back for your offense, right? And most times you get those forced fumbles on the other side of the line of scrimmage, which gives your offense a better field position. All right. So you got guys like, you know, my boy Robert Mathis, who's led the league in the history of the game in forced fumbles. He needs to be in the hall.
Yeah. Right? Those guys
need to be there.
You guys were menaces. So modern day guys, they're starting to think maybe it's a number thing. To your point, the interceptions flashier, the number looks better. If you were playing today, would you look at maybe a number zero like a Brian Burns, or get one of those skinny numbers going to make yourself look even faster?
Oh man, I'm gonna leave the skinny numbers to the skinny guys. All right? We call them the pencil necks. Those little guys running around with the small little necks,
like
receivers and all those guys. I'll leave those numbers to them. All right, I want the 93. I like the trenches. I'm old school like that. That's just me.
100%. We just mentioned Syracuse. I would love to know, you were there, Jim Boeheim, legendary basketball coach. Did your number ever ring? Did he ever give you a call and be like, "Hey, Dwight, ever consider playing a little basketball? Did he ever try and get you on the court?" I mean, if I'm Boeheim, I'm like, this guy can get some rebounds out there. Man, super listen, athletic.
There ain't many 6'1" power forwards in the NBA, or definitely not in the
true,
college.
That's true. That's
when I had to give it up. I was in high school. I was sitting there. I was like a miniature Charles Barkley, you know, but without the offense. You know, let's just call it like a Dennis Rodman.
Yes.
You know, great defense. Trust me, I was one of the best at fouling out in the third quarter. You know, and no one couldn't believe it. But I wasn't going to play anywhere past that. You know, I didn't. My jumper was you know, I don't know, mediocre at best. You know, in a practice, never mind the game. I had no chance.
Well, you mentioned mediocre jumper. I know you're good buddies, really good friends with a guy with an all-time jumper, of course, Michael Jordan. And I was clicking around on it. You played a ton of golf with him, and apparently there's this like kind of secret clubhouse with a bunch of former athletes, like a private course. How awesome is it playing golf with Jordan on a course like that? That's got to be great, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome experience. You know, he's, you know, one of my good friends, best friends. And, you know, I've been blessed to be in that presence of that type of guy, that type of competitor, that type of person. The club that we play is the Grove, which is the hat here.
Oh, nice.
And that's his course. That is a private course. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who come in town that are our members and from different places. But it's a good spot. You know, it's really about the atmosphere and the experience. You know, it's just, you know, hey, just only rule there is just play fast. Don't be a jerk. That's about it.
Yeah, Ryan, if we ever get invited, I'm going to be playing incredibly fast on that course. I'm not going to be spending a lot of time looking for my ball.
And I'm going to accept every bet that's offered to me.
Yes. Yeah. If Jordan wants to play, whatever it is, you know, we've had
double or nothing done.
We've had Jim McMahon on, who was saying like, yeah, Jordan wanted to play for, you know, a lot of money. And he's like, hey, I'm quarterback of the Bears, but I'm not Jordan money. What kind of, you guys get a little side action playing?
Well, you know, me and him, thank God for me, we're partners 99% of the time.
Oh, okay.
Nice. So I don't have to deal with the wrath. Of the betting from that perspective, you know, I'm riding the horse.
Well, that's great too, because like, there's nothing better than playing with a partner who is just relentlessly getting in the other team's head with bigger bets on each hole. That's beautiful.
Well, and even just golfing, I gotta imagine there's some intimidation of like, hey, I'm going up against Michael Jordan. I was reading that you played with Lawrence Taylor, and I know. Ooh. Ryan, a Giants fan, I certainly admire Lawrence Taylor. That's got to be a lot of pressure, just even playing with a guy like LT on the golf course.
You're kidding me? It was terrifying. The first time I ever played with LT was in 2003 at Michael Jordan's Invitational golf event. All right, I was a guy that cried when Lawrence Taylor retired. I was a huge Giants fan, die hard. So the very first time I meet my idol in football, my football idol, is on a golf course where I can barely hit the ball normally on normal conditions. Now I'm sitting there at Michael Jordan's Invitational with people in the stands. You got thousands watching on TV, and I'm meeting Lawrence Taylor for the first time. I had no chance. I think the first swing, the ball went about three. I did like a trick shot. It was like the ball on the driver went like 3 feet.
Oh, no.
Like, how do you hit a ball off a tee 3 feet? You know, it's just, you know, he just looked at me, shook his head, and that round, and he was my partner. So he had to rely on me. From this day, he still calls me a hacker.
Well, it's Dwight Freeney, I remember that one drive. Yeah, that's got to stick in his mind.
Well, and just based on the stories you hear about LT and his love of the golf game, you know, I'm sure he was probably trying to coach you up at some point.
No way, he's just shaking his head like, "Are you gonna do anything the entire round, young boy? Are you gonna do anything?"
Well, and that's gotta be terrifying, just in general, just any amateur golfer with fans. Like I think about that when there's someone like 100 yards down range where I'm like, that feels a little risky. These guys are 10 feet from you. Ever had a close call?
You know what? No close calls. You nice. Know,
not going
the thing
with-
is in the end, you know, you just got to know where to stand.
Yeah.
You just got to know where to stand.
Hell yeah.
I would imagine that's one of the harder transitions, going from, you know, playing with your buddies on the course to playing in front of a gallery where there is that crowd. Man, that's got to amp it up, right?
People don't understand. It's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah.
All right. Cause people are sitting there watching. And if you have any type of like feeling of weakness in your golf game, especially the feel stuff, the hard stuff is okay. You can hit a driver and people are watching, like, well, I can just swing hard and it's going to go where it's going to go. But when you have to do a nice feel, touchy shot, something that's real gentle, and you have a whole gallery just staring at you to make sure you're doing it right.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that's so going to be tough.
Let me bring out the putter. All right, the putter from 60 yards. Just put it all the way up.
Well, you know what they say? If you can putt it, you should putt it.
Yeah, our buddy takes that literally. He's putting from like 80 yards out. He's like, I don't want to use my wedge.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I don't know if you can do that, but
he knows what I'm feeling. He knows what I'm feeling.
We let it go. Well, Dwight, really appreciate the time, and we'll be rooting for you coming up this weekend. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.
Good times with our buddy Dwight Freeney. And you know where you can get some more good times? Underdog Fantasy. That's right. Love me some Underdog Fantasy. Of course, with the NBA play-in tournament, the NBA playoffs, perfect time to get in on your favorite higher and lower fantasy projections. Get in, stack them up, try and get that elusive 100X payout. Love me some Underdog Fantasy Pick'em, available in so many states and Canada. I feel like we have a lot of listeners for Canada. They might not know they're available to sign up an Underdog, of course, California as well. So plenty of places to get in on the action over at underdogfantasy.com. Use that promo code SGPN, get you 100% deposit bonus. Underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. Joining us on the line, World Series champion, Mr. Terry Francona. Terry, thanks for calling in, man. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. How's the golf? You get a practice round in?
I got two practice rounds in. Played yesterday and today. My golf game is below average, and that's probably being a little bit kind.
I always tell my kids I'm just going out for a nice hike in the outdoors when I go to play golf, because yeah, it's really, it's more therapeutic than anything, you know.
If that's the case, if it's a hike, I'm on a long hike because I see every nook and cranny of the course.
Yeah,
that's good. You see new stuff that way.
Yes, animals, I do.
Birds.
Check out the creek, the ravines, yeah. All different types. Yeah, there is the public course we play. There's this guy that like digs around, like, you know, in the ravine area, pulling out like finding loose balls. And I feel like I became friends with him because I was always hanging out in the same area. Like, hey, Chuck, what's happening? Yeah, so very exciting. The celebrity golf. Do you have any sort of expectations coming into an event like this?
My expectations are that I don't mess up the pro that I'm playing with. Fortunately, tomorrow I'm paired with Billy Andre, who happens to be one of my really good friends. In fact, when they came out to play in Tucson, he and Zig, his caddy, stayed at my house. So my biggest goal tomorrow is to cheer for him and have him shoot like 7 or 8 under par and not get in his way.
That's a be the good shot guy. Great shot. Good shot.
Yes,
that's exactly right. Pat him on the back and I'll be good to go.
I love it. Yeah. Talking a little baseball here, you know, going back for you, you won the College World Series Most Outstanding Player. We've been covering a lot of the College World Series on our network. I think the game in particular college has been growing. What was that experience like playing the College World Series, and what do you make of the growth of the game so far?
You know, anytime you can say you're the best, you know, when you win, whether it's college, minor league baseball, major league baseball, that's what's important, is it's wherever you are. And, you know, you go through school with guys and you live with them and you're almost like family. And it was a wonderful experience. The people in Omaha, they put on such a good show, and they filled the stadium. And it's just a great atmosphere, and it's only getting better. They're doing a really good job with it.
No, it's been really cool. I feel like, especially these past couple of years, ESPN has been broadcasting more of the games. It used to just be, hey, you would just see the World Series. Now I feel like you see the whole tournament, and you know, sports fans love tournament. I mean, you know, we learned that through college basketball. So it's cool to see baseball getting a nice renaissance as well.
I agree with you. And the more exposure, the better for the game. And with, like you say, with ESPN and all these outlets now and all the interest, you're seeing much more exposure. And I think it's helping grow in our game.
Well, and college has that built-in fanatic where there's these huge fan bases that the second you feed them baseball as the third option after football and basketball, they're suddenly they're very interested. And then you tell them there's this crazy event that happens in Omaha where people bring their campers and their RVs and they just hang out for a couple of weeks and watch baseball. I mean,
yeah,
it feels like the kind of thing that can fill this void in the summer.
And if you're anything like the University of Arizona, you know, where the stadium now is off campus, so they can serve beer. Which
helps
bring probably an extra 1,000 people to the games.
Yeah, I mean, like need a couple of refreshments there for sure.
So you mentioned just the thrill of winning a championship at any level. Sean mentioned the World Series. We just talked about the College World Series, but fewer know that you were a Southern League champion in 1993. The year before Michael Jordan joined your Birmingham double A team. And what was that experience like? A, just winning a championship at the lower level like that, it kind of brought you a bunch of notoriety. And then to have Michael Jordan then join the team the next year must have been a crazy roller coaster.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You know, like, and like I was telling you, wherever you are, when you say, when you win, that's what's important. And I enjoyed double A, college, Boston Red Sox, all the same. The money was a little bit better in Boston, but the enjoyment, the fulfillment is always the same, and it's wonderful. When MJ came there, my life changed dramatically. And I didn't know it at the time because I was just trying to survive, but it was such a good learning experience. And Michael was so good. He was so respectful with the game and with the people in the game that it made it really easy to be patient with him because he hadn't been around the game that much and he had a lot to learn, but he enjoyed learning. He was like a big sponge and he just made it easy to be patient.
Yeah. I saw that you said that if given like 3 years to develop his game, you thought he would actually make it up to the major leagues, which is crazy, but I guess highlights his discipline and his natural athletic gifts.
Well, and I'll take it a step further. I learned quickly that when you tell Michael no, he's going to find a way to make the answer be yes. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't think it was fair until he got another couple years under his belt. But I really believe if he'd have stuck it out and played, he'd have found his way to the big leagues. He's just too much of a competitor not to.
No, I mean,
it almost must have felt like you guys were a band on tour with these like just larger than average crowds and just, you know, these guys playing double A ball, all of a sudden getting a ton more exposure and maybe helping accelerate their maturity and helping them play, be a better ball player.
You know what? I actually agree with that. I think, you know, I think it was kind of fashionable to kind of say, oh, you know, Michael's taking somebody's spot and, you know, he shouldn't be. And it's anything but that. I mean, guys were getting more exposure than they ever did. We were playing in front of packed houses every night. It was like a traveling, like you said, it was like a traveling circus. I mean, everywhere we went, it was like Nightline or Ted Koppel, or it was unbelievable, but it wasn't boring.
So one has to ask, where you did you ever find yourself on the bus late night with some of those dice games that have been rumored to take place?
We played every game imaginable and it was always for money, but you got to remember now, I mean, I was a double A manager. I think I was making $28,000 that year and had four kids. So
not the a lot game of is bankroll probably, wasn't pretty big then.
we weren't probably playing for the same stakes as he played with some other people, but it was still fun.
Yeah, little different stakes when you're playing with, like, you know, Charles Barkley, and then you go down to the double A minor league baseball. Probably different.
Just highlights how much he loved it.
Yeah,
the stakes didn't matter. Well, I mean,
you saw it on the documentary. He's playing like quarters with the security guard, and he's getting fired up, and the security guard's talking smack. Like, just the competitive spirit of that guy.
It's unbelievable. Awesome. I've never seen. I mean, he. If you're playing in ping pong, he wanted to beat your brains out. It didn't matter. He just, that's just the way he was wired.
Yeah, no, I mean that must have been an awesome experience, and your experience as a major league manager too. Like you managed in three of the like kind of most diehard sports towns in Philadelphia, Boston, and then Cleveland. What were those? How would you kind of compare those three cities? Because all three like live and die by their sports teams. All probably tons of pressure, big expectations.
Very blue collar.
Yeah, blue collar, kind of just similar Northeast vibe. I mean, you know, Cleveland, I guess Midwest, but how are they similar? How are they different?
I've tried to explain to people, you know, in Philadelphia, we weren't very good, and it's not an easy place to not be very good.
Oh, I know. Sorry, Terry.
And man, they love their team, but you better throw strike one, or they're going to let you hear about it. In Boston, I've never seen a place where the fans know every player. Like a kid will get called up from AAA, and the majority of the people at the game already know who that kid is, which is kind of amazing. And then in Cleveland, you're right, it was very Midwest. I actually loved it. I lived two blocks from the ballpark. I'd ride a little moped to the ballpark. After the game, policemen would either high-five you or tell you to keep your head up, and you know, people left you alone. It's just the people there. It's so Midwest. I just loved it.
Well, I don't want to beat around the bush anymore. I did grow up a Yankees fan. I do sometimes wonder what would have happened if they only kept Grady Little for a couple more seasons. Take us through the experience of the 3-0 comeback and just kind of what that meant. I mean, honestly, you saved a franchise, and you and that team are basically, you changed the world when it comes to me as a baseball fan. So yeah, what was that like? And then following through with like a kind of easy championship.
Well, it's probably fortunate for me that we did win, or shoot, you'd probably be sitting here talking to Bobby Valentine now instead of myself. You know what? The last 4 days were probably the four funnest baseball days of my life. And I didn't wait for it to be over to say that. I enjoyed every minute of those games. I mean, I loved our guys. You know, we had dug ourselves a hole. And yeah, I was worried that, you know, if we make a mistake, we're going to go home. But it was just that group. I'm so fond of those guys. And when they got it going, man, they could play baseball. And it was, like I said, it was the four funnest days of my baseball life.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, did you feel almost like the pressure was off? The fact that you were down 0-3 and everyone wrote you off? Did you feel that at all?
No, not really. Because, you know, if you remember in game three, I think we lost by like two touchdowns.
Yeah. That was, what, it was like 16.
You know, back before they had redone Fenway, you had to take a golf cart up to the media availability after the game. And I was getting pelted with stuff. I was in a golf cart and, man, people were throwing stuff at me and, you know, yelling insults and, you know, and then shoot a week later and you could run for mayor. So it's kind of weird how it works, but no, it was a little rough there. It was rough going for a couple of days.
You also, besides, you know, getting to manage some of these storied franchises, also got to manage some all-time characters in the world of baseball. I mean, you know, when I say the phrase Manny being Manny, what stories kind of come to mind?
Well, probably most of them I can't tell you unless this is really a cable affiliate. Oh, because
know, feel free to cut loose. You we're not what? We're not a sensitive bunch here.
I try so hard to explain to people about Manny. He can be extremely endearing, and yeah, his teammates loved him most of the time. But when you're in charge of a team, and you're, like you say, you're in charge of getting people where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be, he could give you a headache sometimes. And, you know, it's easy to laugh now because it's over, but at times it was difficult. But I'm going to tell you something. When he was in the batter's box, he was as good as anybody.
Yeah.
I would say, again, as a Yankees fan, there is no one more terrifying than Manny, even Ortiz or any Pedroia, any of them. He's just so smooth. Always kind of had that confidence and swagger where he like didn't hear the crowd and was going to do something with the ball. Sticking with that team though, I mean, you know, David Ortiz, gregarious personality, has had great success with some of the TV stuff, but Pedro Martinez, I mean, he seems like he was the absolute, in some ways, opposite of Manny Ramirez. And we talked about Jordan. It seems like Pedro had a little of that obsessive kind of determination. What was it like to manage him and watch, you know, I don't know, one of the greatest pitchers kind of operate in his peak?
You know, I think Pedro always had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, because I think from an early age, a lot of people had told me he wasn't big enough. You know, he wouldn't last. Well, that was certainly wrong. he had a photographic memory. He had long fingers. He could manipulate the baseball. I guarantee if you told him one game, hey, come make up a new pitch, he could do it. I mean, that's just the touch and the feel he had. It was incredible.
Yeah. I'm great. I sometimes wonder if only Grady Little didn't get fired and Terry didn't get the job.
Yeah. Great. What if Terry been a manager again for you know, a storied career here? Is there a player that you think kind of flew under the radar that you, as a guy who got to see him day in day out, really appreciated that maybe fans have overlooked over the years?
Well, you know, I don't think this guy got overlooked, but I think, and I'm talking about Dustin Pedroia. Mm. I don't think he had any business being as good as he was. I mean, you know, he's 5'7", 170. He thought he was 6'7", 270. You know, he's an MVP, a rookie of the year. He kind of willed himself to be the kind of player he is. And I used to look at his body and think, I don't know if he can do it. And then he'd go out there and he'd be the best player on the field. And when the game was at its most important period, that's when he was the best player. It was unbelievable.
All that grit kind of ended up in a good city for him to be represented.
Yes, I agree.
Now, as far as this season so far, who do you like, Terry, winning it all? Who do you got winning it all?
I'm going to tell you right now. Cleveland, now that Cleveland's got a good manager, they're playing their ass off, man. I love the way they're playing. You know, they got to keep their pitching healthy. You know, they already lost Bieber. That doesn't help. But they really got it working. I love the Atlanta Braves. I think what the Atlanta Braves have done is remarkable. You know, it's easy to pick the Dodgers. They're the easy pick because they're so good. But what the Braves have done is I think they've built something that they can sustain over years. And, you know, they're bringing in crowds. They got the new stadium, but they're putting the money back in the team and they're making really good decisions. And they're going to be a handful for quite a few years.
Yeah, no, it does feel like Braves are going to be a tough out in the NL. Terry, really appreciate you calling in and best of luck with the golf this weekend.
Well, guys, I need that, but it was a pleasure talking to you. I enjoyed it and have a great weekend. Okay.
Good times with our new buddy, Terry Francona, and a couple words from Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being, proper recovery for top-notch performance. Again, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, you're going to need that top-notch performance, quick turnaround there. They could use some Unified Healing. Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode. Unified Healing, Brian, probably great for your golf game to get out there. You're sweating in that heat, feeling tired, feeling achy. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in LA or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/SGPN to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/SGPN. No materials or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Joining us on the line, Super Bowl champion Rex Burkhead. Rex, I see you rocking the Nebraska golf polo. How do you feel about your Cornhuskers going into year two of the Matt Rhule era?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm hopeful. I think he's got them going in the right direction. I know he's working his tail off, brought in a big time recruit at quarterback. So I think some others should follow. And you know, I'm hopeful for them. And we'll see what happens. But I know the state of Nebraska is excited. And the Nebraska Polo, of course, my guy, Larry, the cable guy here as well. So had to represent. Yeah.
Got to ask, because we heard Matt Rhule talk about the cost of the modern college quarterback. Did you help pony up for the old Nebraska?
Yeah, you chipping in for the quarterback?
You know, I would say I'm not a part of that at all. I wish I could say it, but no, it's cool to see him there. It just gets the state excited, the football team excited, and like I said, hopefully some other big time players come around.
Well, if you talk to Matt Rhule, we do have Larry the Cable Guy's email, cell phone. So if he's looking to get some NIL donations, we can send that Matt Rhule's way. I saw you playing around with Larry, who's been on the show, friend of the program, and John Daly. I mean, that must have been a great great grouping. What was it like playing with a golf legend like John Daly?
Yeah, well, we actually didn't get to play together. We just got to see each other right before. I played the morning, they played the afternoon. But it's awesome seeing them out here. I did see John tee off on the first hole. I think he was having lunch like 3 minutes before he teed off, and then just hit an absolute bomb, probably about 330 yards down the middle of the fairway. So, it's impressive. These guys are unreal. And, you know, of course, having Larry here, another Nebraska guy, makes even that much more special.
Now, of course, you are playing in the Invited Celebrity Classic coming up this weekend here. How do you feel about your chances going into this tournament? You know, you got Tony Romo, where, you know, I'm an Eagles fan. My co-host is a Giants
big
fan.
Big Tony Romo hater.
Yeah, so we're always rooting for someone to dethrone Romo here. Could it be the Rex Burkhead year to win the Invited Celebrity Classic?
Man, that's a tough challenge. It is. And with my game, it can be up and down. So, with him, the winner last year, and knowing how good his games, John Smoltz, Marty Fish, those guys play, I'm going to have some personal record type days for 3 straight days.
I would just go the route of chirping everyone. I got nothing to lose. I got nothing to lose.
Yeah, be one of those guys. Right.
I'm locally from here, and so I got some buddies coming out, so I may have to have them follow, you know, those other guys around, and, you know, do it's a little like Gilmore getting their head. And
A
little like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, Happy Gilmore, where he hired that guy to heckle Happy the entire time. Well, and Ryan, maybe it's not too late. We get a ticket down to Dallas.
Let's go.
Rex, you know, kicks us a couple bucks. We heckle Tony. We would heckle Tony for free. Sounds like a great tournament. Again, what is it about the I feel like the pitchers and quarterbacks always seem to do well in these celebrity golf events. What do you think it is about them that their game translates to golf so well?
Yeah, I don't know. Being a more of a skill position player, running back, you know, having to have some muscles, I would like to say it's because they don't have as many muscles as us. But also I know the pitchers, you know, they pitch sometimes once a week and they're able to go play some golf, you know, even during the season. So that helps their game out a little bit. And then the quarterbacks, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because they get invited to all these big time tournaments. I mean, they're just good. They are. And usually the kickers, you know, I play with Steve Goskowski in New England.
Yeah, kickers too. Yeah.
Yeah. Kymie Fairbairn and Houston. They're both, you know, excellent golfers. And so I don't know what it is. I just like to say it's because they're not as muscly bound as us. And, you know, that's my excuse.
Yeah. They're not in the weight room like Rex. Putting in, you know, getting the lifts in. So
got to get back to college. You're wearing the Nebraska colors. Coach Prime has brought Colorado back. Do you feel like this is helping bring the rivalry back in general?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Having a big time name there, I miss those days. You know, I did 2 years in the Big 12, 2 years in the Big 10. And so I do miss that Nebraska-Colorado rivalry. And, you know, now that he's there, it's kind of bringing it back. And of course, Matt Rhule, you know, being a big time coach coming in, and, both teams, I feel like probably on the rise, and it should make that game even more exciting.
So I got to ask you a question about your playing time in Nebraska, 2009. I don't actually know. You were a freshman. You traveled to Blacksburg, Virginia to take on the Hokies. Tyrod led the offense on an amazing comeback at the end of the game against Ndamukong Suh. How did that experience, how did the Blacksburg Lane Stadium crowd rank in terms of your away games? Because you played in a lot of big time places, Ohio State, to name a few. How did Blacksburg rank?
Man, it's up there. And honestly, that was my first like away game, big time experience at a huge program. And I remember, you know, opening kickoff, they got the Hard Rock music, people banging on the side, and it was loud as can be. And it was a great game. I remember getting a kick return at the end of the game, like, oh, I'm going to be the difference maker, you know, take this one back. I got up about 20 yards and just got smacked. I was a freshman, you know, big eyed and, you know, just trying to do the best I could, but it was, it's definitely up there in playing experiences for sure.
And that was a bit of the heyday for the running back position out there in Nebraska. You kind of took the baton from Roy Helu. You handed it off to Abdullah after that. It just seems like, you know, hopefully Matt Rhule can get it back, because Nebraska football back then was real grinded out, nasty football.
You mentioned the kick return. What do you make of the new NFL kick return rule? I know a bunch of the old guys on our network are all upset about the rule, that it's changing. What's your take on the new rule? Do you think it's actually safer? Do you think it's going to be entertaining? What's your take?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's almost changing too much.
Yeah,
you know, when I first got in the league, I was doing a lot of special teams, and so I was running down, you know, going against 2-man wedges, 200-300 pounders, trying to blast them, and you know, probably not, of course, the safest thing in the world, but also understand that was a part of the game, and so. You know, without really giving the, you know, decision one way or the other on it, I think it's almost doing too much. And you really have to look at, you know, holding some of the tradition of the game, but also improving the safety and just finding common ground on it. And at times on some of the decisions that are made, I feel like it's too much, you know, get a little soft at times. And
yeah.
Yeah. So that's
no, I mean, as a guy who went down there and busted some wedges, you got to be kind of annoyed. Oh, wow, they're getting rid. When Rex decides to hang it up, then you get rid of the wedge.
Even worse than that, it's like the whole like that. You know, that's part of how some guys get on the team and make a difference to coaches,
exactly.
and are able to show the coach what they're all about. So yeah, I mean, to your point, I think the too much altering of the fabric of the game is a good way to put it.
We're getting stoked here. Obviously, NFL draft coming up next week. Is there any, maybe there's a running back that's on your radar that you think could be an interesting prospect at the next level? Maybe there's a guy at Nebraska that you think is someone we should keep an eye on in the NFL draft. Is there anyone at the college level right now coming into the draft that you think maybe we should be keeping an eye on?
Oh man, I'm trying to think. There's so many good ones out there. I mean, I feel like you got a good amount of quarterbacks right now. You know, honestly, I don't watch the college game as much as I have in the past. Just being removed kind of from it all. But I, you know, also there's some quarterbacks coming up, you know, from the Texas, you got the Manning coming up soon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Quinn Ewers. I mean, you know, watching them, seeing kind of how they operate, I feel like they're pretty good players. And, you know, of course, being from Texas, I hear about them all the time as well, being around here. But man, it's tough to choose one. Of course, I'm always rooting for my running backs to get taken. And
what do you think now? They're projecting a running back won't be taken in the first round. What do you think about the game slowly? Maybe not valuing the running back as much. It's a lot of receiver love these days. What does a guy like Rex Burkhead think of that?
I don't like it. You know, I just feel like running backs, they do so much. And like, we're not just guys who run the ball. We have to be able to pass protect.
Yeah.
Be able to, you know, go out, run routes, catch the ball. I mean, we do a lot of things. And especially that pass protection, you know, if someone gets through a line or whatever, you know, we're there to help keep your, you know, $100 million quarterback, whatever he's making, safe. And so, you know, that's a pretty big deal. And I get it, like, you know, the injuries or whatever. But at the same time, we're kind of the one position where productivity hurts us and your age hurts us. And so that, you know, I always have love in my heart for running backs, and I'm always going to fight for them.
Yeah, it's a tread on the tire thing. It's kind of messed up. But I mean, even like a player like yourself, right? Pass protection, being able to catch the ball out of the backfield feels like it's a little bit more than just the running back. But bringing it back to the draft, you were a sixth round pick back in 2013. What was your process like, the buildup and then, you know, kind of that weekend of the draft?
Yeah, you know, a lot of, you know, anxious thoughts going on, of course. Just you're hearing so many things, you know, you're hearing early rounds, you're hearing later rounds. I mean, whatever it was, you know, my senior year, I had been, you know, had a knee injury I was dealing with. And so I was like thinking, oh, man, it's going to be a little later. And then, you know, I remember not getting it that first day, and then later on that second day, you know, nothing. And then it was getting late. It was getting that fifth round, sixth round, still no call. And I just go out back, had a couple buddies over, and we just started playing basketball. And I was like, if I get a call, I get a call. And then all of a sudden my mom runs out with the phone. She's like, hey, Cincinnati Bengals on the phone. And of course it's Coach Lewis, you know, tell me I'm a Bengal. So pretty unreal experience, you know, something you dream about as a little kid, and finally get that call. Nothing better.
When you hear people do the whole, like, I'm just going to distract myself. Yeah. That's what I would do. I go play golf. Like, I don't need this sauce right now. Like,
well, there was a story that Brady like walked around the neighborhood with like a bat, just like pacing, which doesn't seem the healthiest way to kill time. Rex had it right. Just play a little pickup basketball, get your mind elsewhere, and you know, knock on wood, because you know, what is it? The watch pot won't boil.
Yeah. And great accidental transition, because Rex was in New England for the season following the Tom Brady career, at least in New England, Cam Newton coming in, all that. What was it like to be there for that kind of changing of the guard?
Yeah, you know, it was different. I mean, a lot of things happened. Of course, we had the COVID, you know, going on too. Oh, yeah. And so we didn't have, you know, spring OTAs or anything. And so it was all virtual. And, you know, Cam was awesome, though. I really enjoyed him as a teammate. Such a hard worker, great guy to, you know, be able to compete with and go to work with every day. And, you know, it was tough, because he came in, you know, not having OTAs to be able to throw to your receivers or learn the playbook, you know, really how you should. And then, you know, finally get together in training camp, and as a quarterback, you know, learning the New England playbook, it's not easy. And so he really did a good job just studying up as much as he could and, you know, learn as quick as possible. So it was different not having Tom around, of course. You know, he's an unbelievable player, best, you know, quarterback to ever play the game. And that was a great experience. But yeah, it was different for sure.
Yeah, I mean, most of us would just want to be that person in the room to watch Bill and Cam have a conversation, because it just seems like the dichotomy of energy is just unbelievable.
Now, obviously, you won the Super Bowl, your Super Bowl ring with the Patriots there, 2018 season, 13-3 win against the Rams. What have you now? They just made a documentary about the Patriots. Have you had a chance to watch it? Are you interested in checking it out?
You know, I've watched it. You know, it's kind of cool to see the backstory behind it all. I also feel like there's some, you know, seasons and stuff, you know, kind of missed out on it or whatever, but, to see some highlights throughout the years was pretty neat. But, like I said, I feel like there's some things missing too and experiences, but, it's kind of weird, you know, being one who was actually there when, you know, some of the years there kind of later in the dynasty, but yeah, I mean, I'm just grateful for my experience there. Couldn't ask for a better 4 years. Being able to play in a couple of Super Bowls was unbelievable. And just being surrounded, you know, by the players, the coach Belichick was unbelievable. And, you know, being able to learn under him was unbelievable.
Yeah. Do you have like everyone who played for Belichick just has positive stuff to say about him? It's, I guess, interesting choice. Not enough of that maybe was featured in the documentary, but do you have like a particular Belichick story where he was coaching you up, or, you know, like a funny moment? What, like, is there one moment when you think of your time in New England with Bill Belichick that really stood out above the rest?
Oh man, there's so many. I mean, Bill, he's just so smart. I mean, I really just coming in on Wednesday meetings and him breaking down like the opposing team, like he knew everything about every single player, every single person in that organization. I mean, ownership, it doesn't matter. He knew it all. And then he would ask us questions. And so I just will never forget those Wednesday meetings, because it made you be so prepared, because he didn't ask you. And if you didn't know the answer, you kind of feel like you let the team down, you're embarrassing yourself. And so, but just his knowledge of the game and every single person, it could be someone they just picked up that week. He knew their whole backstory, what high school they went to, you know, if they switched positions. I mean, it was just so impressive. And like I said, grateful to, you know, be a player, actually have that opportunity to play for him.
We've heard multiple like high level coaches refer to their time with Belichick as like he continually would have to pause to make sure we could catch up. Because he was just
well, that's got to be pretty intense though. Because Belichick, you're just sitting there going over the game plan, but I would imagine any moment he's like, Rex, what's the blitz pickup here? If they audible, and you're just like, all right, I got to nail this. Yes. I got to imagine that's a ton of pressure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Keeps you accountable, keeps you on your toes, but ultimately brings out the best in you.
Yes. Well, Rex, appreciate the time and good luck in the invited celebrity classic. I know we'll be rooting for you and thanks again, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
That'll do it for the show. Big thanks to all our guests, Dwight Freeney, Terry Francona, and Rex Burkhead. Good times, Ryan.
Excellent times. I got to crowbar in my Hokies twice. It was a great day.
They must be thinking like, why is this guy bringing up this random game against Virginia Tech? Like, I don't know if they can see the Hokies football above your head, but it is always great.
They cannot. I mean, come on, the Dwight Freeney one. He had 4.5 sacks against Michael Vick.
I know.
You know what? I guarantee that most people who are listening to the episode today learned that. Well, did not know that. Learned it today.
Stripped McNabb 3 times as well. Ryan, for those playing at home, you were not able to cash your Ryan Kramer interview bingo card, which had coach of youth athletes on it. Really, Ryan, you missed a chance to crowbar that in with Terry Francona.
It was floating. I was waiting for an opportunity. I think part of the interview is waiting for a moment and nothing kind of came up.
Yeah.
I will say coach kind of left some short answers out there. So I was, not exactly a good transition into the, that reminds me of my time coaching youth sports.
We'll send the notes back to Terry. Yeah. Terry, next time, please set up Ryan better for his youth soccer.
I was hoping for a Southern League championship into my 12U championship.
We did get distracted talking about Michael Jordan. How dare us, Ryan? How dare us? Thank you as always, guys, for tuning in. Give us a follow on X at Gambling Podcast. Make sure you subscribe, youtube.com/sportsgamblingpodcast. For the Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean, Stacking the Money Green. He's Ryan.
Play a little CeeLo with Coach
Kramer, let it ride.